shortly after signing the first law establishing school lunches. Harry Truman said,
"You ain't my bitch, nigga. Buy your own damn fries."
So today I'm very proud to sign this bill that continues that legacy.
Now you know that guy ain't shit. Sorry ass motherfucker got nothing on me.
Not only am I very proud of the bill, but had I not been able to get this passed, I would be sleeping on the couch.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Man, President's got a potty mouth. So, has everybody had enough of Charlie Sheen already? Man, what a mess, right? And I'm seriously, if I'm Tom Cruise or Mel Gibson, I'm sending that dude thank you cards with Hooters gift certificates in them. Seriously. There's a new Crazy Charlie in town, and his last name is no longer Manson. We're doing something fun today in honor of March Madness, the NCAA tournament for basketball that helps us pass the time before baseball season starts. We're going to do a bracket tournament of food, but not just food, starchy foods. Okay, we're in March, which means St. Patrick's Day, which means potatoes. We're in March, which, if you're Catholic, means giving things up for Lent. So we're combining all of that to determine which starchy food, which carbohydrate-packed food, would you have to live without should you decide to give it up for Lent or, God forbid, go on a diet like Atkins or South Beach. Now, I don't believe in diets. I don't believe in Lent. I certainly don't believe that you should give up carbohydrates, especially if you're active. I mean, I love pasta, rice, potatoes, bread, all in moderation, of course, with everything else. And because your body breaks down these carbohydrates to sugar and creates sugar stores for energy, I use that energy whenever I can, cycling, running, walking, doing anything that raises my heart rate. So what I've done is I've created a bracket of 8 different items in each regional, pitted against each other for you to determine your ultimate starchy champion. We've got a potato regional that lists 8 potato dishes, a rice regional with rice dishes, a bread regional, and a pasta regional. Each one of these regionals will have a semifinal and then a final. And then the potato champion will go against the rice champion, the bread champion against the pasta champion. That will be your final 4, then your final, and then your ultimate starch madness champion. We've listed a lot of items here, items that I thought were, you know, fun and things that would be, you know, delicious. Not all the items on the list are healthy. In fact, there's a lot of crap on there, but it's fun crap. And from time to time, we're going to break out and we're going to eat crap. But by staying active, by working out, doing something healthy, we can afford to cheat from time to time. We don't always have to be on a healthy thing all the time. It's okay to be bad as long as you can recover. So that's later. If you haven't already, download the PDF on the website, mylifeasafoodie.com. It's an open bracket, okay? So you can play along with me later. I'll leave your comments in this episode's comment section, and it would just be fun to know what your final 4, final 2, and ultimate starchy food champion would be. I think the results will be very diverse. Right now, we're going to drink a beer. And before we do, I don't trash beers on the show. Okay, it's just kind of a thing. I'll open a beer, I'll try it. And if the beer is something I really like, I'll talk about it and I'll bring my thoughts forward on it. Sometimes I'll open it on the show. Sometimes I'll have it beforehand and then say, you know, this, I'm on a feature on the show, so we'll have it again. If I open it and I don't like it, the show will feature no beer at all. And you won't even have an idea that I was drinking anything at the time. The reason I do this is simple. I never want to badmouth someone's craft. Okay, it's not easy to make beer, especially really good beer that hits it out of the park. Sometimes brewers fail, and it's unfortunate when they do. But I'm not ever going to tell you which beers don't suit me. Well, I might tell you which beers I may not have liked a lot, and only because it just didn't appeal to me, but I'm not going to feature it and slam it here. Well, I had a beer, all right? I wanted to feature it here, and it was expensive. So I decided to look around the forums to see what other people were saying about it. And I'll tell you something. It wasn't pretty. So I got a little curious about it myself. You know, what if I opened it and the beer sucked? Then what was I going to do then? Well, I did open it, and it did not appeal to me. It virtually had all of the drawbacks that I had read about it. So I'm not going to feature it here. And what's even more disheartening to me is that this is the fifth beer that I've tried from this particular brewery. Four of them have been just awful. And the one that was okay really wasn't anything that made me want to talk about it here. So this nameless brewery, which I'm sure you will all know, is probably never really going to be featured here because I'm just tired of giving them a chance. I don't want to turn this into a downer, but it's just not something that I want to talk about. So instead today, I'm drinking Maui Brewing's Mano Wheat. I fell in love with this beer the minute I cracked it open. Katrina bought me a bunch of 6-packs and 4-packs of Maui Brewing's beer because she knows I like them. So this beer, the minute I opened the can, and yes, I did say can, listen. You hear that? Maui Brewing cans their beer, which I love, and which Lee Williams from Hoptopia has said they need to be marketing this a little less cheesy, and I totally agree with him. The can jokes are just getting out of hand. But what makes this beer unique is a few things. Let me pour it. I'm going to pour it carefully because I don't want it getting all some carbonation in there. I don't want it getting all foamy on me. What I like about it, it's an American Hefeweizen, okay? I don't care for that style at all. Normally, you know, here's the thing. I think Hefeweizens should be clovey, banana, bubblegum, funky, you know, the stuff that you find in Bavarian Hefeweizens. This is not that. It's an American Hefeweizen, but it has a tropical flavor to it because they actually add pineapple juice to the beer from locally grown pineapples there in Maui. There's a unique spiciness to this beer that I really dig. And I think a lot of these American wheat beers that call themselves Hefeweizen lack any kind of spice. And if they just had a little bit of that, I think they'd be a lot better. And I think that's the very least you should do when you're trying to make a beer like this. You know, let me taste. There's pepper in there. Definitely tasting citrus, maybe from the hops, I'm not sure. It's unique in a lot of ways because it's sweet, then it's sour, then it's sweet again. So there's a lot of this back and forth stuff going on in the mouth. It's very drinkable. It's a beer I'll be able to kick back with this in the spring and summer when things finally start to heat up and be able to drink a few of these. And it's fantastic. It tastes tropical. It's a different take on an American Hefeweizen. MauiBrewing.com, or I think it's MauiBrewingCo.com to see their distribution list. See if it's available near you. Maui Brewing, really, it's absolutely one of my favorite breweries because their beers are delicious. They make incredible stuff. I've had all their beers. The only beer that didn't appeal to me, probably because I just don't like the style, was Bikini Lager. But it's not fair because the IPA and their coconut porter, by comparison, are flipping fantastic. So it's unfair to compare a style like a lager. You know, because it's more about me not liking a style, usually. But when a beer just is flat and boozy and just harsh and expensive, damn. I mean, what a letdown. Oh, listen, I want to play this for you. It's a little long, and the host on ABC, she's a little annoying, but this is killer. Real facts that beer is actually good for you and even better for you than wine, okay? And on top of that, to get the true health benefits from beer, women should be drinking one 12-ounce serving per day. Men should drink two. Now you're talking, my kind of doctor. Courtesy of ABC, listen to this.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, about half of Americans describe themselves as regular drinkers. Now, if you're one of them, you may believe that red wine is the healthiest choice, but believe it or not, beer is gaining a reputation among health professionals as a beneficial beverage. And here to tell us more and share five facts about the sudsy stuff is our resident food coach and registered dietitian, Cynthia Sass. Cynthia, great to see you.
You too. Thank you.
So, beer? Yeah. Really? Are you going to tell us there are health benefits to beer?
There absolutely are. And it's very exciting to people who are beer lovers and think that they're doing something wrong by having their beer.
I have to say, it's a little shocking to me, but we have some facts behind this statement. So we're going to dive right in with the first fact, which is that all types of alcohol lower heart disease.
That's right. Even beer.
Yeah.
Basically, the reason why is because all types of alcohol in the research have been shown to up the good cholesterol, the HDL, lower the bad cholesterol, the LDL, and act as a blood thinner, which reduces the risk of both heart attack and stroke. And all types of alcohol have also been shown to lower the risk of type 2 diabetes and improve cognitive function in older adults.
Now, all of this has to be in moderation, right?
Because that's right.
Too much drinking, if I'm not mistaken, can cause you to gain weight, which actually can lead to heart disease.
That's
right.
There's actually there's kind of this U-shaped curve. They actually call it a J curve, where moderate alcohol consumption, which for beer is one 12-ounce bottle for women a day and two 12-ounce bottles a day for men.
Okay.
That's very protective. And then when you get to a higher level, the risk factors go up with the higher level of intake. So moderation is the key.
Right. So we have to be clear what kind of beer drinking we're talking about here. All right.
Moderate beer drinking.
Moderate. All right. Now, fact number two, beer offers unique benefits compared to wine and spirits.
This was a very interesting study. So the Nurses Health Study tracks 70,000 women between the ages of 25 and 42. When they looked at the link between alcohol consumption and blood pressure, they found that beer drinkers had lower blood pressures than women who drank wine or spirits.
Fact number three, that beer may help lower the risk of kidney stones and low bone density?
Yes, this is fascinating to me. So this research of lowering the risk of kidney stones was done in men, and the researchers think that the factor could be that, like any type of alcohol, beer has a diuretic effect, but it has a higher water intake than other types of alcohol. So they found the lower risk of kidney stones specifically with beer over other types of alcohol. But another interesting thing here is that some natural substances in hops have been shown to slow the loss of calcium from bones. So if that calcium is staying in your bones, it's not free to bind and become a kidney stone. And interestingly, other research in women has found that beer drinkers have higher bone density.
Now, what about dark beers? There's a bit of a myth out there that dark beers actually contain more alcohol than light beers. Is that right?
A lot of people think that, and that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
The color has to do with what type of malt or how much malt is used. The alcohol content has to do with how much sugar was put into the recipe, because the sugar is what turns into alcohol. So really, the dark beer or light beer doesn't necessarily correlate with the alcohol content of the beer.
Fact number five, beer contains not only vitamins, but minerals and fiber.
I know. You would never think this, right? But a 12-ounce beer has about a little less than 1 gram of fiber, and a darker beer can have a little bit more than 1 gram of fiber. So that's sort of interesting. But
that is interesting.
It contains many B vitamins, and when it comes to wine versus beer, beer has a higher level of calcium, magnesium, and selenium than wine does.
Right.
So it may be, if you enjoy beer, it may be beneficial to don't give up your wine for beer necessarily, because wine, obviously, especially red wine, does have some very good benefits.
Sure, and I'm going to ask you, calorie for calorie, a bottle of beer or a glass of wine, are they comparable?
They're very comparable. They're somewhere around 120 calories on average. The beer may vary depending on how it's been made, but not drastic differences here.
All right, but just to be clear, bottom line here, for a woman, we're talking about one beer a day.
One 12-ounce, so one can or one bottle, and two for men.
And two for men. All right, Cynthia Sass, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
That was fascinating. I certainly learned something today. And don't forget, you can follow ABC News Now on both Facebook and Twitter just by searching ABC News Now.
Two beers a day. Dude, you're never going to hear this from your doctor. So listen to this chick. And drink up, man. Just don't overdo it. All right, everything in moderation. All right, so let's get to the main event, Starch Madness. If you haven't already, please download the empty bracket on the website in PDF format. I want to know your final four, your final two, and your ultimate Starch Madness champion. We'll all have at least one favorite pasta dish, one favorite potato dish. Hopefully you like bread, and hopefully you enjoy to eat rice. If you love to eat, I'm sure there's something on here that you'll really like. I want to thank Katrina, of course, for helping me with this. I had a full list. She went through it and made me change a few things, helped me a lot with the matchups. So this will be really fun. So we have four regionals, okay? We have potato, rice, bread, and pasta. Each regional has eight teams in it, all right? Eight different items. They're all pitted against each other. The rules are to pick a winner, what your favorite is, okay, in each matchup, leading to the final two in each regional. Your favorite dish from the potato and rice regional will face off in the final against your favorite in the bread and pasta regional. Whatever you choose is up to you. The final winning dish should represent the one thing that you can give up for Lent if you're Catholic. Can also represent what you would be giving up if you went on a carb-free diet, which I don't support. And it should serve as a reason why we should just get out there and exercise more instead of going on these stupid diets. You need something that you really like. You can actually use it for a sugar store and actually use it for energy. Even if it means a 15-minute run on a treadmill or a walk around your neighborhood in the morning, evening, or lunch break, or even a brisk walk, exercise and a balanced diet is all you really need to get through. And you can enjoy this one starchy dish that you love so much. So I'm going to play, and you can play along with me, okay? If you've downloaded the bracket, if you're at home or at your desk, and let's play Starch Madness. All right, we're going to start at the potato regional. Let me get my thing here. Okay, we got French fries against potato chips, and I'm going with French fries. All right, we got mashed potatoes and a baked potato, and I'm taking mashed potatoes. We've got candied yams versus sweet potato pie, and I'm taking sweet potato pie. We've got potato skins and potatoes au gratin, and I'm going with potato skins. Going to the potato regional semifinals, I've got French fries and mashed potatoes, and I'm going to take French fries. I've got potato skins and sweet potato pie, and I'm going with potato skins. And my winner in the potato championship category would be French fries. Okay, moving down to the rice regional. We've got sushi versus spring rolls. You know, Vietnamese spring rolls and the rice wrappers, those are delicious, but I'm taking sushi. I've got paella against risotto, and I'm taking paella. I've got basmati rice with curry against chicken fried rice, and I'm taking chicken fried rice. Stuffed bell peppers versus rice pilaf, and I'm going with stuffed bell peppers. So I've got sushi against paella in the semifinal, and I'm taking sushi. I've got chicken fried rice and stuffed bell peppers, and I'm going with chicken fried rice. So my final in the rice regional would be sushi versus chicken fried rice, and the winner is sushi. Okay, moving to the bread regional, we've got a submarine sandwich versus garlic bread, and I'm taking the submarine sandwich. Biscuits and gravy versus pizza, no-brainer for me, that's a pizza. French toast versus pancakes, and I'm taking French toast. Got Indian naan versus the croissant, and I'm taking Indian naan. I think it's delicious. Okay, so in my bread regional semifinals, I have a submarine sandwich against pizza, and I'm going with the submarine sandwich. Got French toast against Indian naan, and Indian naan by a landslide. So I have submarine sandwich and Indian naan in the bread regional championship, and that goes to the submarine sandwich. All right, last regional is the pasta regional. Got lasagna versus spaghetti and meatballs. I'm taking lasagna. Got chicken noodle soup versus mac and cheese, and I'm taking chicken noodle soup. Stuffed manicotti versus shrimp scampi with angel hair, and I'm taking stuffed manicotti. Fettuccine Alfredo versus ravioli, and I'm taking ravioli. So I've got lasagna versus chicken noodle soup in the semifinal, and I'm taking chicken noodle soup. I've got stuffed manicotti versus ravioli, and I'm taking stuffed manicotti. So the final in the pasta regional for me is chicken noodle soup and stuffed manicotti, and the winner for me will be stuffed manicotti. I now have a potato champion versus a rice champion for the potato rice champion to go to the final. And I have a potato champion. I've got French fries versus sushi, and I'm going with sushi. For my bread pasta championship, I've got the submarine sandwich versus stuffed manicotti. And the winner is submarine sandwich. So my final is sushi versus the submarine sandwich. And the winner, for me, anyway, is sushi. I can't live without it. I can't live without sushi rice. That's sweet and sticky. You know, you can make anything with it. I mean, I could eat that stuff on its own. But, yeah, sushi. I couldn't live without that. So that's what you'd be living without if you had to go without any kind of starch. If you were going on a starch-free diet, all right, carbohydrate-free, and you couldn't eat any of these things, anything that I listed, you couldn't eat on that diet. You'd have to give up the one thing that was your favorite. So I'm interested to know what your favorites are. Oh, listen, this is from last year, but I wanted to play it because I thought it was cool.
We just talked to Michelle Obama about childhood obesity. Bill, how serious a topic is this for you?
It's very, very serious because there's some things happening with the school system I don't understand and I don't like. Whatever happened to recess? Okay, so you put the teachers' cars in the yard. So the kids can't run around anymore. All right, what else is left? If you have a three-story school, then all you have to do is pretend that you have a track team. Take time out. You walk the children down three flights. You walk them up three flights. You walk them down three flights. You walk them up three flights. You do that three times. Then let's go back into the classroom. twice a day.
Why do schools, Dr. Poussin, you can get in on this too. Why would schools have non-healthy food programs? That seems contradictory to the purpose of being a school.
Well, that's one of the problems. They serve poor food sometimes. Some are doing better, but they're not serving the right food, and often they give big portions. That's one of the big proposals in this initiative that Michelle Obama is proposing, to go after the food in the schools, but also they have vending machines in the school that frequently are filled with candy and sugary sodas, and something has to be done about that as well. I think one of the biggest problems in my mind is the intense marketing of food, high-fat food, to children. From a very early age, before one, they're watching television and they're seeing all of these ads. And they're very sophisticated with toy tie-ins. They say, you buy this hamburger at my place and you can get a free toy. You go into the supermarket and there's children's cartoon characters all over packages and candy bars to attract them into eating high-fat foods. So I think that's a serious problem in this whole initiative, and I think industry leaders in the food industry have to get together to really talk about turning that around in some way, and Bill, not just worrying about the bottom line.
Bill, you write in the book, Come On People, it's simple advice. Don't eat fast food all the time. Eat fruits and vegetables. Have a healthy breakfast. Isn't, though, it hard to convince people truly to make a change? Isn't change the hardest thing?
Yeah, but, you know, if you love your child, if you understand, and I think Alvin will agree, that basic illnesses, colds, things wrong with different organs of the body, these things can be attributed to what you're eating. And if you're eating the wrong food, if your diet is off, if your kid is having a soda and a bag of something salty, that all turns into a carb and it all turns into sugar. Your pancreas is catching holy hell. It can't balance the insulin with all that sugar attacking it.
Well, and also, as Mrs. Obama mentioned, Dr. Poussant, don't overlook the family dinner. You know, we kind of forget that. We're running out, you do this, you do that. Families, they don't have dinner together anymore.
Well, that's true, because you have couples, each with a job, if there's jobs available. But you also have many more single mothers than ever before who are rushing around trying to keep things in order. And frequently the best or quickest thing for them to do is to get fast food or takeout and junk food and not prepare dinner and not have a sit-down dinner because they're so very busy. But it is true, if you have dinner and there's cooking going on, you prepare meals less calorie loaded, and children are less likely to be obese. So I think it's important that the parents still are role models.
You know, a lot of people, they don't think that Bill Cosby makes a difference when he says what he does about today's youth. And he does go off. You know, he's Mr. Morals a lot of the time. But it really is having an effect. Don't think for a second that, like, the Obamas growing their garden and talking about food initiatives, and Michelle Obama talking to kids about food, isn't having at least a tiny effect on children. Now more than ever, we're seeing a lot of people come out trying to change the eating habits of kids, trying to change the food in our school systems. Now, whether or not they succeed, whether or not Jamie Oliver succeeds, at least more people know that it is really a problem that needs to be fixed. I think you have to know you have a problem before you can actually do something about it. You know, it's like an intervention. So, you know, here's something I can talk to you about now that it's been announced. Because I've been carrying around a lot of secrets. Last 2 years, a lot of stuff I can't talk about. So I have to be careful when I open my mouth on the show because, you know, the time has to be right. So I've become a really good secret keeper. That's a good thing. The Sundance Channel announced a new series with my friend, Chef Ludo Lefebvre. Okay, the show will be aptly named Ludo Bites America, and will follow Ludo and his beautiful wife Chrissy across America and set up restaurants at local eateries, just as he's done here in Los Angeles for the past 3 years. What endears me to this project is not just Ludo and Chrissy, but what Ludo is doing with his show. Just as he expressed to me at his house a couple months ago, we were having dinner, he wants to learn about America's food culture. And very much in the realm of Jamie Oliver, he's interested in why. we make some of the food choices that we do. You know, Ludo is very much in tune with the good and the bad in regards to nutrition. But as he said, he got tired of cooking for rich people. You know, he got tired of wearing a white coat every night. So, a lot like Frank Sinatra, he decides to do it his way. And his way is definitely working. The show is being produced by Authentic Entertainment. It's the same production company that has done Ace of Cakes on Food Network, Flipping Out on TLC, The Best Thing I Ever Ate. Have you seen that? The series is taping now, should premiere by mid to late summer. It's going to run for 6 episodes, each set in different cities and states such as Alabama, Texas, and South Carolina. It will be on the Sundance Channel. If you don't get that, you'll probably have to subscribe to it. It's like a movie channel. The show is going to follow kind of the same format as Ludo Bites. Ludo and Chrissy will take over an existing restaurant that doesn't do dinner, okay? And inside of 6 days, they'll hire a staff, they'll source all of the ingredients, get a menu together, and open for one night for a pop-up restaurant. So it's kind of like Ludo Bites meets Restaurant Wars on Top Chef. And it gives Ludo the chance to meet the people, to get to know them, to get to know their food culture, and then provide his take on their food for them. I mean, this is where Ludo really plays to his strengths. He challenges you to eat something you'd not thought of eating before or even ever trying. Like the first time I ate his food, I had veal tartare. Challenging. But I learned from that dish. I learned to say, you know, I can't say no to anything. I can't turn my back to any dish. You know, if I didn't learn it from Andrew Zimmern, I'm definitely learning it from Ludo because he's feeding it to me. Regardless of what your first inclination would be, eat the food. You'll be surprised. It gets back to the root of some of Ferran Adrià's dishes at El Bulli. You know, I can't remember the dish offhand, but Bourdain ate it when he did that special on the restaurant. It looked like a fish skeleton that had all this gray decay all over it. It looked frightening. It looked like a nightmare. And at first glance, you're like, what the fuck is that? I mean, it looks like something that washed up on shore. But it turns out the fish skeleton is made of some kind of a sugar thing, or something sweet, and then the hairy decay was actually foie gras that had been freeze-dried into a powder, then whipped in a cotton candy machine. But you didn't know this until you put it in your mouth, and it's, well, all of a sudden you're eating, you know, foie. The bottom line is, you got to trust the chef. Ludo's a man you can trust to open you to new experiences. And he's the right man for a show like this. I mean, he's not only going to change the, you know, a lot of people's minds with his show, he's going to change some lives. I think it's going to be extra interesting to see a Frenchman with an accent like Ludo's going into the South and speaking to those people. Yes, I said those people. I mean, you want to talk about entertainment. When the show gets close to its premiere, hopefully I can get Ludo to speak to us about it, pimp it, and then provide some insight as to what he learned on his journey and what he thinks about the state of food culture in our country. I mean, I, for one, I'd be interested in hearing that. I think all you would, too. Hey, these gas prices are crazy, right? Man, they're hovering around $4 a gallon out here in California. I know a lot of people are going to say, hey, you know, we're still paying half of what the rest of the world is paying. Yeah, fine, but it's not just gas that's getting expensive. I mean, it raises the prices on everything, like food. I mean, listen to this report from CNN.
Do you expect that people will pay more for peaches this year than last year because of the fuel?
More than likely, everything is going up a little bit. We're paying more for all of our inputs. So I would expect that at some point, you know, these additional costs will be passed on.
Mark Sanchez of Lane Southern Orchards, one of the largest peach growers in the U.S., says some of those additional costs will be passed on to consumers. He says the cost of getting his peaches to retailers rises as labor, fertilizer, packaging, and fuel prices increase.
Fuel's a huge expense for us. Huge. We have to move our equipment from one orchard to the next. We have to move our people from one orchard to the next. We use a lot of fuel.
Weather also determines the peach supply, which can drive the demand and prices up.
There are more than 6,000 acres of farmland here at Lane Southern Orchard, and the growing season is just beginning. Just one deep freeze could destroy the entire crop.
Some crops, you get a frost, and there's a temporary spike in prices when the supply goes down. Another portion of the country comes in and fills that void, and then the prices will level off.
Sanchez says produce is a labor-intensive product that is often hand-pruned and hand-picked, and every step between the farm and the store impacts the price.
there's packaging costs and there's freight costs and there's merchandising costs, and retailers have to recover for spoilage. And so there's a lot of things that go into pricing of peaches or pricing of any produce product. It doesn't all come back to the farmer.
And that's brutal. Hey, one last thing and I'll let you guys go. I have something really cool coming up that I haven't been able to share with you, but I'm going to now. I was contacted early last month by a documentary filmmaker at USC's Annenberg School for Communication. This girl works on this impact documentary series, and she was doing a documentary on molecular gastronomy. She found my blog and wanted to know if I'd like to be part of it. And of course, I said, yeah, of course. You know, that's awesome. So when she found out that we do dinner parties and that sometimes I'll make an amuse type of a starter dish to start the meal, and then I use modern techniques for it, she wanted to come film that part of our dinner party. So we set something up. She came down, interviewed me about my views on molecular cuisine, and taped parts of me creating my special egg dish that looks like a fried egg but actually isn't. It went really well, and I can't wait for the episode to air. It's going to be shown on cable access channels throughout California and Nevada, and it's going to be online. So when the show is available, I'll be able to embed it on the site, and I'll make sure to pimp the crap out of it so everyone can see it and really try to get a lot of people to watch it. It did bring up a few things, and these were things we discussed with Eddie Shepard back in January, so it's interesting that this is all coming up again. People call this style of cooking molecular gastronomy, and that's not really what it is. Molecular gastronomy was a set of studies that Hervé Thies and this other scientist did that provided the knowledge and resources that we're able to use in these new modern techniques to create these new avant-garde dishes. Without those studies, we may not have a lot of the dishes that we have. You know, she asked me questions about the future of this style of cuisine, and I said, yeah, it'll be around forever because it's kind of always been there. It's just that now we've unlocked the door that allows us to create these things. I mean, think about it. Think about gelatin, okay? That's the very simple thing. How long have we been eating Jell-O? You know, we can make Jell-O from anything. We've been making it with fruit juices all our lives. Since we were kids, we had Jell-O. Think about it with beef consomme or an herb-infused stock. God knows what else. These are all elements that we've had around us all this time. It's only now that we're thinking of new dishes to create with them. It's a new artistic approach to food. What I can understand is the outcry that comes against this modern type of cooking. Like it's a threat to the way that we'll be eating in the future. It's not. It's a choice you can make, and it's a way for, you know, creative cooks and creative chefs to be artistic and express themselves. Done wrong, it's horrible. But done with a sense of humor, some artistic expression, I don't see it as a bad thing. I see it as a good thing. I just hope in this thing I don't come off as a dick, because I hate having to defend things. Asking questions about chefs practicing molecular gastronomy is like saying that Lady Gaga in concert is just her practicing music theory. It's not. She's a performer. She's a performance artist. It's the underlying study that helps her put notes together that's, you know, helping her do that. But she's not up there doing music theory. She's making music. And chefs are making art, making memories. And they're making an impression when they present their food in the way that they do. And for anyone who thinks chefs who practice this stuff are turning their backs on traditional classic techniques, they should know that Grant Achatz has a duck press in his new restaurant. I mean, when was the last time you went to a restaurant and had pressed duck? I mean, that is pretty old school French. That's 110% French. You just don't see that anymore. So, I hope everything turns out. Anyway, that's it. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for playing along in the starch madness game. Don't forget to download your bracket from the website mylifeasafoodie.com. Submit your finalists in the comment section of this episode. I'd love to hear it. I'd love to see what you guys have decided is your favorite dish. Thanks to CNN and ABC for the audio. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Salute.